What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
High Five Casino.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
Today's sponsor is Loot Crate, and for less than $20 a month, Loot Crate gives the geek in you a special treat every month. Loot Crate is a subscription box service with $40+ worth of geek, gamer, pop culture gear, collectibles, apparel, comics delivered to your mailbox every single month. This month's theme is time, and quite appropriately, Loot Crate is celebrating the 30th anniversary of Back to the Future, time-traveling movie, Marty McFly. In part two, this is the exact month that is happening in that movie. Wow. The timeless appeal of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, they are also celebrating, and the timey-wimey charm of Doctor Who. So time in general, don't you see how it all weaves together? You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And then when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. You're never going to get those items again. So go to lootcrate.com/words, enter the code WORDS to save $3 on your new subscription today. So do it up. Get cool stuff to your mailbox. Awesome. Check it out. Bridge 9 Records, amazing record label, and their new release from H2O. It's their first new record in 7 years. It comes out on October 9th, and you can pre-order it at b9store.com/H2O. So do that, and then here's the rest of the show. Everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. Pull up a chair, sit down, stay a while. We'll be here for, you know, just over an hour, like we usually are. Thank you for joining us. And this is the show in which we talk to people who are involved in independent music and are creating things from that world. And this month is a very special month because it's a themed month. It's weird because I've done this a few times before, and the listenership seems to really increase when I do this. And I don't necessarily know why. Maybe people feel like they can like lock into something. Forgive the title. It's a little hyperbolic, but at the same time, I think it gets the point across. So I'm calling it this month of October, the Faces of Modern Hardcore. And I wanted to specifically focus on hardcore music because for all intent and purposes, if someone put a gun to my head and asked me to describe myself, I would call myself a hardcore kid. And, you know, even though I am a 35-year-old grown-ass man, and I just had my birthday, everybody. It was on October 1st. So I don't know why you didn't send me a present. I'm pretty disappointed in you, but, you know, I'll let it slide for this time. The reason that I call myself that is because that's just where my identity comes from. And so hardcore music is still a very, very large part of my life. Maybe I don't listen to it as much as I used to because there's so much other stuff going on and so much other great music that exists, but I want to make sure that I am obviously focusing on the people who are making an impact, you know, releasing records, touring, being a part of the modern hardcore scene. And, you know, because sometimes I think people reach a certain age and they're like, you know, they do the whole nostalgia trip of like, oh man, it used to be better when I used to go to shows all the time or whatever. It's crap. You're always going to look back on your own experiences with rose-colored glasses and think that your era was the best and blah, 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 which that's fine if you think that. I'm not judging you. But know that people are creating those same exact memories that you are holding so dear with different and newer and cooler bands than the band that you listened to 15 years ago. Tear down that nostalgia factor. I think we all try to rally against it. So the guest this week is Brandon Garone from the band Incendiary. He is the vocalist. The band is incredible. They're from the New York City area, and they definitely tread in the metallic hardcore world. Indecision, Most Precious Blood, all that sort of stuff. But then they have their very, very unique take on it. Politically charged messaging, and also very introspective, but not in the, oh, woe is me sort of thing. A lot of great stuff going on. So that's why I wanted to focus on the band, and more specifically, Brendan as the vocalist, because he has a very, very interesting story. Let's get some house cleaning bits out of the way, and then we will dive into the interview. So I had to make mention of a very good friend of mine released a book, and that's no small feat to release a book. So my friend Matt Johnson, I love him dearly. He sang for bands called Preacher Gone to Texas and a band called Ignite the Will from the Midwest. I urge you to go check it out. It is theamericanhearts.com. It is a great book about basically just America. And I'm going to keep it general for you because I want to pique the curiosity. I want you to visit the website and kind of see what he has going on over there. I've read the book. It's incredible. It's very cute. It's very tiny. It's kind of like a pamphlet in a way, but it's thick enough, obviously, to be identified as a book. You're not going to get a 40-page book because I don't think that would be properly defined as a book. That's more or less a newsletter, maybe? I don't know. But go to the website and check out his book because, we got to support the people who are doing the creative work and the heavy lifting. And I just love when my friends are able to achieve their, this is going to sound so cliche, but achieve their dreams. You know, when it's like you have that thing that you want to do and then you're able to kind of put your thoughts, your finances, everything on the line and get it out there. So that's exactly what Matt did. So check out his book. Like I said, I celebrated a birthday. It was awesome. It was a great birthday. I just hung out with my kid, went to a local amusement park called Knott's Berry Farm, and it was quite fun. I just wanted to keep the birthday really nice and tight, keep it to family, do some fun things. You know, the week prior, I saw that movie Sicario. And if you haven't seen that movie Sicario, please go see it. The movie is absolutely unbelievable. I know you're not looking for movie recommendations right now, but I still wanted to let you know that. It was a very nice experience. And as I grow older, I just realized that it's like, man, there's so much stuff that gets in the way of just pure enjoyment, you know, like obligations and all these other things. And, oh, I guess I got to do this because of this certain thing. Or it's like, I got to have a huge party because of all these friends. No, you don't. Do whatever you want. Do whatever's going to make you happy. That's ultimately the guiding principle that most of us should live our lives with. Do whatever's going to make you happy, as long as you're not hurting somebody else, you know? Just try to live by that rule. Brandon Garone, the vocalist from Incendiary. Band has been kicking around since the, maybe late 2000s, early 10s. I don't know if that's a thing to say, but they're incredibly important for a variety of reasons, but one of them being the fact that they've been able to achieve a lot with very little time because, the band isn't a touring monolith where they're not spending 300 days out of the year on the road. That's sometimes a hard thing to do, to be able to kind of find that balance between real life, but then also still being active. So we actually discussed that a lot in this conversation, and I think it was incredibly revealing to discuss that with a person kind of out in the open because a lot of the times, it just doesn't get readily discussed. So without further ado, here's my discussion with Brendan, and I will talk to you after the interview's over. So good. I usually start these things off with my own sort of personal entry point to kind of view the band and everything like that. So it was when I first heard you guys, which I can't recall exactly what recording it was. It was earlier on. So it was like, what did you guys put out first? Like you guys.
So we had, we put out a demo, which I hope you knew.
Yeah, I don't think I heard that.
Then there was a 7-inch called Amongst the Filth. Then we put out a full length called Crusade.
Okay.
And then we put out 3 split 7-inches, and then we put out Cost of Living.
Right. I want to say it was the 7-inch that I first got exposed to, regardless, but it was earlier on. It was definitely before the split 7-inch series that you guys did.
Right.
Or not series, but
kind of was. Yeah.
It was intentional to do them as all?
Definitely not.
Okay.
No, they just like, we kept getting offered and we were like, yeah, sure. That's cool. And it does make it more manageable because you're like, I only have to write 2 songs. Hell yeah.
Right.
So yeah, by the end of that, we were like, okay, let's not do any more splits.
Right. We've done that.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where I was like, when I first heard you guys, I was like, oh, that, like, why would somebody be doing the kind of like mid-90s, like mid, like, you know, 1997 metalcore-ish vibe? And it was like, because to me, that was always something that was very regional, where it was like, I would hear it out of Southern California, like the bands that Taken used to play with or whatever. And then, so it was just kind of weird to be like, I mean, with the exception of like Indecision, it was like, oh, like, so you guys are from New York and you sound like that. But then I saw, like, once I started to kind of delve more into the band, I was like, oh, like, this is obviously like intentional. And like, you guys wanted to sound like that from the onset. And it wasn't like you guys were just trying to be like, you know, a carbon copy of Indecision or whatever, or maybe
No, it wasn't. I mean, I hope it doesn't come off that way.
But like, I mean,
they were obviously a huge influence on us. It was really simple because I think it was everybody in the band is almost exactly the same age. Our drummer's 2 years older, right? So that's kind of just like the hardcore that we grew up listening to. So I don't really, you know, I don't know what else we would have done. And the other thing is that we started the band when we were like in our, like, we weren't 16. Right. You know what I mean? I was 22, I guess, or 21. So like, it wasn't like we were these little kids going with the current trends. Like I was already behind as far as my influences. So it was just what we grew up listening to. True. You know what I mean? Like it was coming out in, you know, 2007, we started the band. That was not the popular genre.
No.
Far from it.
No, not right. And that was what was kind of shocking to me, where it was just like, and that's why I immediately like gravitated towards it. Cause I was like, oh, that's, anytime you see a band that exists against whatever current trend is happening, whether intentional or not, you know, I definitely find myself being like, that's cool. They're doing that. Like it's derivative, but of something that has came completely before that, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, Strife was a huge influence.
Yeah.
They were like my favorite band. They were also, which, you know, California, also one of the first hardcore bands that I got into. Uh-huh. They kind of got me into hardcore outside of my local scene. So like, it was supernatural.
Yeah.
And then it was just by the fact of the random people who started to, you know, join the band also, that they happened to be influencing the same kind of thing. Again, probably because of the age, you know what I mean? And the both guitar players are huge VOD fans. We're up on Long Island. Like, it starts to make sense.
Choice.
You know what I mean? Like, it starts to make sense.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you have no choice. If you're from Long Island and you don't mention Vision of Disorder, like, I definitely think that there's one of those, like, I think you're kicked out.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much. We're not allowed to go to a show anymore. Yeah.
Right. You're like, you can't play Long Island.
Exactly.
My very specific Vision of Disorder memory is, like, I think they toured out to the West Coast. They played Showcase Theater when that still existed. And I think they played with Bloodlet, but the show was great, but it was one of those things where I was dating a girl that was super into ska. So we would I was sorry to hear it. Cause I had to go, we made an agreement with one another that I would go to some of her shows. She would go to some of my shows. And it was like, that was such a bad show. There's no way that she would like any second of that show at all.
No, probably not.
Yeah. Dreadlock dudes from Florida playing really, really weird.
Very, very noticeable lack of horns at that show. Very noticeable lack of horns, probably.
Totally. And I just remember, the reason I bring that up is because I still feel guilty of being like, oh man, I punished her for like 4 hours. I was like, oh God. But anyway, I mean, the show was great. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I digress. Are you born and raised in the East Coast?
I am.
You strike me as a very East Coast dude.
I know. My accent is starting to creep back too because, so I was born in Smithtown, which is on Long Island.
Okay.
Born and raised. My parents still live in the same house, still together. Very Long Island centric.
Right. Very white picket fence, suburban-ish.
Yeah, pretty much middle class. We lived in a more upper middle class area, but we're definitely middle class.
Got it.
Both of my parents were teachers.
Oh, what did they teach?
My dad taught social studies for like 40 years and is now a professor at the community college in Long Island still.
Okay.
My mom was a science teacher, but stopped to have us and kind of like be at home.
Sure.
And then went back and just did early childhood. So like nursery school, stuff like that.
Ah, got it. Brother, obviously brothers and sisters?
I have two older sisters. Yeah. Okay. 9 years older and 5 years older.
Okay. Yep. So you're the baby of the group.
I'm the baby.
You can't do anything wrong.
No, I'm the golden child, baby.
your sisters had to be punished. You're in the sense of like they had to go through all the trials and tribulations.
Oh yeah, they were the test case, and then when it came to me, I was the perfect angel. But the downside of that is I had three mothers. I had my mom, and then my sisters. which is actually really nice. And now I wouldn't have it any other way, but
right.
they definitely, especially my oldest sister, she's, you know, fairly older.
Years older. Right.
So, I definitely felt that way sometimes.
That's true. Yeah. Especially when you do have, like you said, you have that wide swath of ages where it's like, you know, when you're 10, one sister is 15, one sister's 19. So it's like you were seeing.
And that, so 9 years was funny. Cause like I grew up, my parents, we didn't really do a lot of vacations. We didn't have like new cars or anything, but there was a big emphasis on education.
Okay.
So when it came time to apply for colleges, they were like, you can go wherever you want. Where most families, I feel like, are kind of the opposite, where it's like they get to do cool stuff. But when it comes to the colleges, it's like you're going to the local college.
Right.
Like
let's see what's in your budget.
Yeah. Let's see what's in your budget. For my parents, they were like, we're really going to sacrifice for this. But growing up, I remember our vacations were just us looking at colleges for my sisters. So they'd be like, hey, guys, we're going to Lehigh University. So let's see what's fun to do in Pennsylvania. And we'll throw me out in the car. I'm like, all right, here we go.
Right.
Yeah, so like I,
the college trips were the
Yeah. My mom was like telling the story. This just came up the other day where like both my sisters are very intelligent. My older sister is extremely smart. So we went to a lot of colleges. It was serious, blah, blah, blah. And I got to the point where I had been in so many colleges and so many college tours that I asked a question on a tour, like throughout the grounds. It was somewhere like Cornell or something. And my mom was like, I had to be 11. And I put up my hands and I asked a question about like the student housing or something. And everyone was just like, what is this kid doing? Who is that tiny dork asking this question?
Right. Who's this precocious little 11-year-old?
Exactly. Taking notes or whatever. Yeah.
Totally. Like this is in his future. It's just like, that's cute. He's curious about it.
Yep.
Well, I mean, obviously, I presume that because of your parents' background, like that there was no other choice but to put that strong emphasis on education. Because I guess they felt like...
Yeah, I think it was always... a plan. I was always, you know, did well in school and it was something that I was interested in. Not going to college, I don't even think would have crossed my mind. Like looking back on it, it was just like, well, when I finish high school, I'm going to go to college.
You right.
I mean, because I think that's what my sisters had done beforehand. And it was just never really like a big deal. It was like, all right, well, where am I going to school?
You know,
and that's where like from like, you know, my interests and things like that, I had always been interested in anthropology and archaeology from an early age. And as I kept going into school and getting higher and higher, I was like, I guess this is what I'm going to keep studying because that's what I was interested in. So that's why I kept going to college. And then I went on to get my master's degree, went to graduate school, stuff like that.
Right.
So
you're not normal.
No,
And I put it in the context of the world that we obviously live in and come from as far as like the punk and hardcore scene.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
Well, Milo goes to college, man.
That's true. No, I know that's true. Yeah. Obviously, you can look at him and be like, "Well, yeah." There's room for smart people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a regular dude. It was just something that I did partly because I mean, especially with continuing into graduate school, I didn't really know what else I wanted to do, and it was one of those things where I was like, "Well, I like this and I'm pretty good at it. I don't know what I certainly don't want to get a job." And in some ways, it's people forget like going to college and stuff. Like it's a nice way to put off having to get a real job.
It totally is.
You know, college is easy.
You can be a professional student.
Totally.
Yeah. Right.
It costs a lot of money, but yeah, you can.
Totally. Yeah. You can.
I'm paying that price now, but yeah, absolutely.
Right. You can quote unquote buy yourself.
You can buy yourself time.
10 years if you're taking the 5 to 6 year plan.
Absolutely.
And then you decide to try to, you know, get a master's or what have you.
Yep.
So because of your, like you said, you were pretty engaged in high school as far as like, or did school kind of come easy to you?
It came easy to me. It came easy to me, I guess, looking back on it. I just did it. I wasn't like any kind of like insane student. You know what I mean? I didn't go to some crazy school for undergrad or anything like that. It was something that I just did. There was an emphasis on education in my family from an early age. And it was just kind of a second nature thing. I always wanted to do the best that I could, but it wasn't something that I like loved. I never loved going to school or not particularly.
It was probably, I guess, habitual or just like, habitual. Oh, this is what I do.
Totally. Yeah. It's just like, this is what you have to do. This is, you know, and it's not like my parents were even pressuring. It was just like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
I even looking back, I couldn't have imagined being like, maybe I'll do something. Like, it's just, that's what you did.
Right. Right.
Went to college.
Right. Up, yeah. There was no other path.
Which isn't a bad thing. You know what I mean?
No, it's true. It's a structure. I mean,
it's a structure.
There's obviously, like, we as human beings do well with structure.
Yes. Like, especially myself.
Right.
I love being busy. Right. I don't remember the last time I've been bored. I'm so busy all the time. And I kind of like that. I think that fits my personality. I'm a very type A, very quick, sort of intense person.
Yeah.
And I like having that structure. I like having a plan and things like that.
Right, right. You don't like waking up and be like, oh, what am I going to do today?
No, I'm not like that at all. I'm the exact opposite of that.
Right. Oh,
the exact opposite of, like, hey, whatever happens, happens. I've never said that in my life. Like,
right. I have to wake up by this time because I need to be there by this time, and then everything else will follow.
Yeah, that's just kind of how I am.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Woo!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant. AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those, too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
I've always been that way.
So you were that type of kid as well, where you were very, I guess, like, focused in whatever you were doing, like,
yeah,
outside of school?
Yeah, I was always involved in a lot of different things. I think, and I always call it, like, the curse of being well-rounded, because actually, like, fast forward later, I had a really difficult time with jobs and stuff because I was always, like, pretty interested in a lot of different things, which doesn't really get you anywhere.
It's true.
I mean, there's a certain charm in seeing people who are like, I want to be a aeronautics engineer. I'm into planes. And then I went to college for it. And then I got a job right after for it. And now that's what I do.
Right.
I work on planes or whatever. Like, there's a certain something that's really nice about that. Totally. I was always the exact opposite of that. Just kind of all over the road and stuff.
You were interested in everything. So therefore it made it difficult to even, like, narrow your focus in anything.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, and things kept evolving but I mean, I was always really interested in music and playing the drums, and that was the conduit for me getting involved into, like, playing music and into hardcore and stuff like that. It was actually just being interested in playing the drums in general.
Sure. And what sparked that interest?
I'd always been interested in it. I think my neighbor played the drums when I was a little kid. I had started when I was, like, in fifth grade. I always just liked it. And then I got into, like, punk and stuff, a lot of it just because of the drumming. And I remember being like, how can these guys play so fast
totally.
And do all this stuff? I remember getting smashed by The Offspring, right?
Yep.
When I was super young. And that first song, Nitro, where it's like, do-do-do-da-do-do-da. And I remember sitting at my drum set and being like, this is impossible. There is no way a human being can do this.
Right.
Like, being, like, you know, 12 and trying to do that. I was like, this is impossible.
Totally.
And then, so that's what got me into a lot of the music, was, like, drumming kind of, like, got me into heavier stuff.
Interesting. You know? So it's not to go, like, all analytical psychologist on you, but it's just like there's a structure to drums. Like,
yeah, there is. I never thought of it that way.
Because there's no, I mean, clearly there's no notes.
Absolutely.
Like, so there's no lack of interpretation from that. It's just like, no, I'm going to hit this drum. It's going to make that noise. I'm going to hit the cymbal. It's going to make that noise.
Absolutely. You know what you're going to get, man. You know what you're going to get.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I can increase the volume by hitting it harder.
Exactly.
But there isn't really much inflection on that.
No, that's true.
Yeah, no, I identify with the drumming. I was always drawn to that too. And I was always terrible enough to never play in a band, which I was very thankful for, like taking that. But it was like, yeah. I just remember being obsessed with Green Day's Dookie in regards to
absolutely.
Trey Cole's drumming.
Yeah.
Just like where he's hitting the cymbals. I so remember just doing air drums and being like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hitting every cymbal, dude.
Absolutely.
I'm the best drummer ever.
It was fun. You know what I mean?
Dude,
I
so
loved
good.
It. I loved it.
Were your sisters into that sort of music at all? Or was there
my
any...
oldest sister wasn't. My middle sister was kind of.
Okay.
At least into alternative music. So
right.
She definitely turned me on to some
you
stuff.
You guys were bouncing stuff off each other?
Yeah. More so from the, like, I'm really into like some emo and stuff as well, obviously. Yep. And she got me into that. She bought me a comp CD called Nowcore. And
oh,
I don't
yeah.
know if you've ever heard of that. You have?
I have heard that, of
that. That, like... opened my eyes up to everything. She got me that pretty early on. I think I was in middle school, maybe.
Okay.
And that was like a game changer for me. I was like, these bands are all awesome.
Sure. What bands did you pick out of that that were like the
Texas the Reason, Promise Ring, and Braid?
Sure.
Loved them, all of them.
Right.
And I didn't like Modest Mouse, and I don't to this day.
The terrible
never on that.
Terrible. Awful.
Yeah, bands. I never liked them. But there's a that comp is amazing.
Yeah.
And then I think for heavier music, I really actually started from like local music and then kind of branched out. So there was always kind of, as you know, a really vibrant scene on Long Island.
Right.
So I got involved in going to like local shows and like things in my town and stuff like that. And that kind of led me to discovering more like national or bigger, whatever you want to call it, bands.
Yeah.
I mean, like I got into Strife. I always tell the story because I bought a Strife t-shirt that had a cool live shot on the back.
Sure.
Southern California
which
Straight
one?
Edge.
Which one?
The Southern California
oh,
Straight
yeah,
Edge
yeah.
with like the Japanese thing.
Of course.
Never heard Strife in my entire life.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah.
I bought the seat. I was like, I was sure. I was like, this shirt is awesome.
Right.
And so I bought that.
Great design.
And then, great design. And then I was like, I probably should listen to this band because I'm like already being a huge poser. Like I should probably check them out.
Right.
And I remember being like, wow, this is like super intense. But
I made a good buy.
Yeah. I mean, this is a good decision. Yeah.
Right.
This is a really
right.
good decision. But like, I think that it's funny how that kind of stuff, I always think about the one aspect from getting into new music that existed then that I don't know if it exists as much now mm-hmm. is ignorance. Just not knowing what's going on because there is no internet. There was no research. It was, you know, the liner
yeah.
notes and it was the local None of the Above Records, it was called in Long Island that I used to go. And sometimes just pick out records because the covers were cool.
Totally.
And just the complete lack of, you have no idea what's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, you have no context, no information. You're
no,
just tripping into it.
It's really cool now where a lot of young kids have these, you know, you see them have huge friend groups and they're all interested in hardcore. I did not have that. I had one buddy who was into hardcore, you know, in middle school and high school. And then there were some more as I got older, but like just kind of in a bubble.
You were
and whatever
it.
You found, just winging it, man.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's nice. There's a kind of nostalgia about that. Just everybody knows everything about everything now.
Yeah.
And back then it was just like, I would only find stuff from liner notes. And if I happened to see the band live,
right.
Things like that. You
yeah.
Know?
No, that is a very good point. Cause I definitely, I personally try not to tread on nostalgia too much of like, oh, it was better back then, but there definitely is something. I think it's
different.
Right.
It was just different.
It's different.
Now the downside of it was I missed shows that I could have went to and missed
yeah.
bands and I missed the heyday of things that I was old enough for, but it wasn't really on my radar.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I got into Silent Majority late.
Yeah.
I did not really, that wasn't really on my radar when I was growing up. I just didn't
yeah,
hear
you missed it.
Missed
right.
it. Straight up missed it.
Totally.
And I didn't have my 10 friends being like, yo, texting me, you got to come to the show today. I was just chilling in my house in Spittown and they were playing shows. I had no idea.
Right.
Right. That's always stuck with me as something that is back then. And it's probably never going to be the same.
Yeah, no, that's, I agree with you. Cause there definitely is something, I think charming about the idea of like, whatever, getting a comp
yeah.
and then, you know, whatever, I'll use the Victory Style One compilation
okay.
where it was like, you know, you didn't like getting that at the, whatever, I got that when I was like 15 years old.
Yep.
I didn't have a context for what was really like cool. Besides I knew like, I was like, oh, I've heard of Earth Crisis and Static
yeah.
Case. But so it's like when I got super into like Guilt
mm-hmm.
off that comp, there was no one telling me like, yo, dude, Guilt's kind of whack. Like that,
there was no, it was just, as my buddy says, it was just heavy.
Right.
It's like heavy music and not heavy music. Like you didn't really know like, oh, this isn't cool. Like, I don't know. Right. Sounds heavy like, to me. Right. Sounds pretty sick to me.
Yeah, I was like, dead guy's pretty rad. Like, I didn't know that maybe wasn't acceptable in, like, the larger grand scheme of things.
And you turned out to be correct because dead guy is, in fact, rad.
Red. Yeah, exactly. I was like, those are the two bands that, like, stuck out beyond the heavy hitters on there. That's why I was just like, oh, dead guy and guilt. And then other people were just like, dude, really? And I was like, yeah. Like, I mean, years later, I was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, I mean, I'm glad I never, like, waved the Hi-Fi and the Roadburners. Or was like,
yeah, there's some...
Yeah, you there's know, some misses on there.
They can't all be zingers, right?
No, exactly.
I think that can't understate from my age group, that early 30s, late 20s, whatever, how important like Victory Style and Punk-O-Rama was. I mean, that influenced thousands of kids getting into stuff and having them at a Hot Topic and walking in and giving away the short music for short people comp and stuff. That got so many people into alternative music. It's one of the most brilliant marketing jobs that they've ever done.
Totally. Like those things changed the trajectory of people's lives.
Totally.
And that's not an understatement.
If you took a panel of 10 people, I bet, that are into hardcore, that are the ages of between 28 and let's say 34, and you said, how did you get into hardcore? I guarantee that half of them at least would mention one of those comps, Victory Style, Punk-O-Rama, something like that.
Yeah, like Rev's In Flight compilation.
Totally, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, it is funny. The importance is definitely not missed on, like you said, that age group.
Yeah.
And so like when you started to get into this style of music and what I would presume your parents would be like, oh, this is kind of weird stuff.
Definitely.
How were they reacting to you bringing home weird stuff? And like, were they just kind of like, oh, well, you're still doing all right in school. Like, we'll give him a long leash. Or
that's exactly what it was like.
Okay.
They were like, he seems to be fine. You know what I mean? Like,
he hasn't worshiped the devil yet.
Yeah. And again, like my sister probably listened to some heavy stuff too. Like, so she helped me out a little, you know, paved the way a bit. Yeah. But yeah, they were obviously not into it. They're not into it at all. Right. But they were cool. They're like, he seems fine. You know, he's chilling. He has friends. He does stuff. He still kind of plays sports and seems healthy-ish.
Right.
So whatever, let him do it. Yeah, they were always pretty supportive of that and also really supportive of playing drums, which is horrible and annoying. And I would play in my basement and it's deafeningly loud. And my parents never complained about it, ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my mom came from like a very musical household. And some of those things, just even talking about it now, like, a lot of parents wouldn't have done that. It's brutal.
It's totally
so
loud. Drums are literally the worst. Like that's like
totally.
Most parents' worst night. Oh, drums.
Most expensive.
Yep.
Loudest. Takes up the most room.
Totally not compact.
It's just the worst thing in the world. Yeah.
Totally. It's so true.
I know.
And so as you started to, like you said, matriculate through school and, you know, you really focused on that like you said, anthropology was basically kind of what you were focused on.
Yeah. That's the thing that I was history and anthropology. I was interested in that from an early age.
Okay.
And then I kind of just stuck with it when I went to school in University of New Hampshire for undergrad. When I finished, I was like, I don't really know what to do. I'm going to apply to graduate school, I guess, because like, think about it. All I've known is going to school, you know what I mean? So I applied to a bunch of schools and I was like, I got into some good ones. I was like, I guess I'm going to do this now.
Sure.
I'm just going to stick with it.
Cause you went to Columbia after that?
Or? I went to Columbia for graduate school. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anthropology. And I think that the music thing is weird for me, right? Because of how I married the two, because I was still playing in bands all this time.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I played in, my first band was in high school, senior year, and we played, and it was awesome, and played, like, house shows with, in
what the basement. What was the name of that?
The Unthinkables.
Let me guess what you guys tried to sound like. Punkish, I would presume.
Yeah, it was pretty much, it was Bad Descendants, but then, like, I would try to get us to cover Force of Change by Stray. Like, that's like exactly what it was like.
Right.
I was like, this is cool. What about Firestorm as a cover? You know what I mean? Like,
I love that. I mean, that's total kid logic, kid mentality. Yeah,
because it's like you only have the people that you know at your disposal.
Totally.
It's not like, well, this dude's into more like late 2000s style of hardcore. It's like this guy literally plays the guitar. He has met all of the requirements.
He's a warm body.
He plays and he shows up. Yeah.
So the only way that you're able to inject your own personal like musical influence is by the suggestion of covers.
Yeah.
Or
like playing really hard and putting in double bass parts when they were completely superfluous, things like that, you know?
I love that. I have to interrupt because the idea, that notion just like brought back such a vivid memory of like the first band I played in was called Doom Society. And we were that
way cooler name than the Unthinkables, man.
Oh, damn. Doom Society, dude. But that, I mean, that was, we took that from, there was that punk band from Minneapolis called Code 13, whatever. Anyways, but it was one of those things where it was like, same thing, same function where it's like, yeah, I had two punk dudes. I was into hardcore and punk and that, whatever. It was this hodgepodge of people, yep, trying to sound like something. But then it was like, I just remember being like bringing the Skewbald 7-inch, like the Ian McKay's, like, you know, two song 7. I was just like, hey, how about we cover this? And everyone was like, what the fuck are you
what
talking
about? What is this crap? Yeah, I know.
Totally. And I was like, oh yeah, that was too much of a reach. Like, but yeah, yeah, but the only way that I was like trying to push us towards that, but yeah, that was your only recourse.
The only people that are around. Again, it's like, there are only a few people that I knew. It's funny because I know people now from the Long Island scene that I was like, I went to shows with you since I was like 14. I never spoke to you once and now we're friends. And it was just like, again, like, right, there wasn't like, I'll follow them on Instagram later. Like, right, I'm not trying to sound 1,000 years old, no, but that you do see the effect that had on, sure, on your upbringing.
It brings
at that
the world
time
closer, right?
Yeah. I mean, I did. It was funny, you know? And so, I mean, getting back to the music thing, yep, I always played in bands, but I would do them on summer breaks. I would start a band with my friends or I'd play in college, and I had a bunch of bands on Long Island. I was in this band called Up the Fury that we started that actually toured a good amount and stuff after that. But like, it got to be, you know, Labor Day and they were like, all right, Brendan, like, what's up? And I was like, gonna drive back to Durham, New Hampshire. And they're like, okay, well, we're getting a new drummer. And that happened as they should have, you right know, and that happened a lot. And that's how Incendiary started. Is I quit or got kicked out of every band I was in because I either wouldn't stay,
available,
wouldn't
right
quit college. I wouldn't quit. My parents had money invested in it.
Was that a weird, like, did you feel pulled in a way? Like, did you feel conflicted at all about that?
Totally.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
There was another band, like a pop punk band that I was in New Hampshire for a while that was starting to like do really well. Uh-huh. And I was like, this is crazy. I've, you know, played and people would come to our shows and like, I'm playing drums and I'm playing drums all the time. And like, and then I was like, yeah, you know, they were like, dude, you know, shit or get off the pot basically. And I was like, I'm not going to do it. I wasn't ready to take the leap and like quit college and do all that stuff. I had a life there,
yeah,
and it was important to me to finish what I started. And so when I got back to New Hampshire, back from New Hampshire rather, and moved back to New York City to go to graduate school, uh-huh, I was like, that's it. I'm doing a band right now. Like, I'm doing a band that I'm here in New York, I'm staying in New York, and I want to do a band straight right up. And the only reason I wound up starting Incendiary and singing is because I didn't feel like bringing my drums everywhere. I was like, I'm going to be busy now and I'm going to be practicing on Long Island where all my buddies are from. This is going to be a pain in the ass, so I probably should just sing. This is literally the only reason why that happened.
Out of sheer function.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore.
But it's funny how that era kind of changed things now because, I mean, you know, we can talk about the touring stuff, but like, if I was doing Incendiary when we were 18 and go and like, we're like, yeah, we're going to hold off on school, let's hit the road. I mean, we would have toured like that, you know, obviously, but
yeah,
things happened with us so late that it kind of changed the dynamic of the band and the way that we conduct things. You know?
Right. Right. Well, no, I mean, that's a question I was going to ask a little bit later, but yeah, obviously it's like, it was, Incendiary has always seemed very intentional by the fact like, oh yeah, we're not going to do like full crazy US tours. We're not going to be gone 8 months out of the year. And it seems like that was that always kind of like from the inception of it, that I was like, yeah, that's the plan. Like we'll play shows when we can, we'll be active when we can, but we're not going to make this the focal point. Or was that kind of, did that have to change throughout it?
It was always kind of the thing. I mean, I think early on, well, first of all, I mean, you know how it is. When we started the band, I just wanted to play some local shows on Long right Island and hang out. Like, never in a million years did I, A, think I'd still be doing this band at 31. B, you know, playing New Jersey. Like, playing the first time we played out of state, I was like, holy shit, this is insane. Because I didn't have those expectations. I just right wanted to play really, really bad and not break up because I was in school or something. I wanted to just do a band. That's all I cared about, was doing a band. That's right. Like, it was important to me. And I felt like it was 4 years of frustration of doing bands and starting them and getting excited and then having to stop and then right. starting other projects and having to stop. So I think as we evolved, it was, yeah, from an early perspective, it was like, I don't think we're going to try to like make it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's
how, because well, you definitely need to have that sort of like, whatever you want to call it, youthful energy, stupidity of like, oh, let's like, we're going to do this. Like, yeah, we're going to, because it's like, you know, even now where it's like, there's obviously a notion of sustainability from like touring and making
totally.
It as even as a hardcore band. That's still like, it's still a long shot. It's still hard to do that.
It's brutal. I mean, I think it just was, maybe I was like too responsible. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Hardcore was always such a huge part of my life and always is. And was pretty much the only thing I wanted to do. But I guess it was almost a too little too late scenario for me personally. I mean, to be blunt.
Check it out.
High Five Casino.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
I know you probably like to read books. I love reading books. Reading is awesome, but sometimes you don't have the time. You know, if you're reading like maybe 5 minutes before you go to bed and you get through like half a page, no more. Let me help you out. So Audible.com, I'm sure you've seen them out and about in other advertising spectrums. I'm here to tell you, this is the real deal. Audible.com provides over 180,000 audio programs from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and business information providers. Their app is free, and it works on iPhones, iPad, Android, and Windows Phone. You can also download and listen to on your Kindle Fire and over 500 other MP3 players. And unlike a streaming or a rental service, with Audible, you own your books, so you can access them anytime, anywhere, right from your smartphone. Audible.com also has the Great Listen Guarantee. This thing's amazing. I love this idea. If you decide that you don't like the book, you know, you're like halfway into it and you're like, this is terrible, don't worry about it. You can exchange any book you aren't happy with for another title anytime, no questions asked. That's amazing. I've used Audible for a long time, and I distinctly remember a very awesome listening experience of the book Gone Girl. Now, I'm sure most of you have seen the movie, Ben Affleck, Rosamund Pike, you know, great, great thriller. I listened to that book maybe about a year and a half before the movie came out, and I was gripped. It was like a, I don't know, 12, 13 hour listening experience, and I wanted to sit down there for the entire 12 hours. That's how good the book was. It was such an awesome reading experience. And when I say reading, I mean reading through my ears. I want to give that book to you for free. And you know how to do that? Go to audible.com and you can start a free 30-day trial membership and you can get a book for free. Go to audible.com/100words. That's the number, 100 words. And you can start your free trial today. Listen, I'm giving you a book. Take me up on this offer. Show your support for the show. No effort whatsoever. Less than 5 minutes. You'll be done. You'll have a book. You'll have supported the show. And everybody walks away a winner. After you do that, and after you have that awesome listening experience, you're going to be like, you know what? I'm going to keep it rolling.
Audible needs to be a part of my life.
All right, you heard me talk about the new H2O record at the very top of the show. Here's some more details about it. So first of all, thank you so much to Bridge Nine Records for believing in this show and deciding to come on as a sponsor. It's so awesome when labels do that because, you know, I'll be frank, there are not a lot of record labels that are interested in spending money because, after all, the music industry is in a terrible place. Thank you so much, Bridge Nine. But I'm very, very excited to talk to you about the new H2O record. So most of you can recall the interview I had with Toby, I don't know, 50 or some odd episodes ago. But if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it because it's a very, it's a revealing conversation. But this is the first new H2O record in 7 years. And it comes out on October 9th of this year, 2015. Pre-order the record, b9store.com/H2O. And they'll be on tour in November and December doing their own U.S. headliner. Then in January, they're going over to Europe, where they are immensely popular. They're on their Persistence tour with a bunch of other bands like Terror and Ignite, Twitching Tongues, a bunch of other great bands. What's even cooler about this particular release is that, Toby, the singer, knows a lot of people. And he knows a skater, maybe you've heard of him before, called Steve Caballero. Awesome, because they did a music video with him where they're skating around, playing guitars. Pre-order the record, b9store.com/H2O, and check out all the other cool stuff they have going on. I actually had Chris Wren, the owner of the label, on 20 or so shows ago, and it renewed my faith that people running record labels, it's a thankless job, and it's very difficult to make ends meet, but Chris has been doing it for close to 20 years, or actually over 20 years now, I think. It's incredible. So check out the new H2O record, check out Bridge Nine Records in general, and thank you very much. Here's the rest of the show.
I was growing myself in my life in conjunction with getting more involved in the scene and loving both aspects of it also. Sure. And so when it came down to that, I mean, everyone was kind of on the same page. Like, I don't know if I also didn't come from the kind of family where I'm going to be now, like, say 23, 24 and living in one of the most expensive cities in the world, saying like, I don't think I can afford to tour full time because right. I my parents aren't going to give me any money.
Right.
And I have to work. Like that was a big factor of it.
Sure.
And I was like, I'm not moving back home and living with my parents. Like, I'm not doing it.
Right.
Straight up. Practical reasons, I guess.
Totally. Some hard lines that you drew for yourself where it was like, oh yeah, there's no reason to be able. I mean, it sounds like to me, what you're describing, it sounds like a very healthy relationship that you had, obviously, like with music. Because there is definitely, I look at my approach to the way that when I was touring on a regular basis, and like once things started to happen for us, I never had that notion of like making it. I was just like, oh, these are exciting opportunities that we'll still keep.
Yeah.
But I had a job. I was working. I had all the real life stuff set up.
Yep.
But then there is, when you look at, kids that are 17 years old and are doing Warped Tour for the first time and have neck tattoos and face tattoos, and you're just like, what are you gonna do in 3 years?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not even so much from
probably
like,
not be involved in hardcore. Most of the people who come in with a splash are usually the ones kind of just tiptoeing out,
No,
mean?
No, absolutely.
Like, and it's like,
like I said earlier, it's just like, it's kind of, it's reckless, and like that's what youth should be. But
definitely,
then there's that element of like, you gotta have that in your head that like, you're gonna have to come out the other side.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like, I need to plan, fiscally right, responsible for my future. It's actually, and even, I don't really self-reflect on things too much, but thinking on it now, it goes back to that. I was always interested in a lot of different shit,
sure.
Always. I played sports, and I was interested in some academic, like, I was always interested in so many different things. I loved BMX. I loved riding BMX, like a million different things. And so hardcore was one of the things that I loved in addition to X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And so it wasn't like, this is the only thing I care about.
Right.
I got to be a band, I got
to tour.
Yeah.
All the eggs in this basket.
Really, more and more important to me as I got older, actually, rather than most people, it was kind of would be the less, right? It actually got more important to me.
Right.
And I think that, that said, after the initial period of like playing local shows and stuff, I knew that I never wanted to fall into like the local band thing. I'm not into like, there are so many bands that are just binary. They're either touring and playing 250 shows a year,
yep,
or they don't see the point. and play. It's like, well, we can't tour anymore. I mean, it happens all the time.
It does.
And I try to convince some of my friends' bands who are break up. I'm like, just don't break up. There's no reason to break up in 2015. It doesn't matter unless it's inter-band politics. And so for us, it was like, to your point, actually, it wasn't about making, it was like, let's just keep playing shows. And I would put ourselves up to any band ever for having full-time jobs and playing. I mean, we covered a lot of ground. We have played a lot in a lot of places with not working at Starbucks, with like careers. You know, we've really
You've used vacation time to play shows.
Lots and done sketchy stuff. And yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think that while we didn't say like, hey, we're going to do a bunch of US tours, the five of us were on the same page about being like, let's push this thing to see how much we can do can we play both sides?
Right.
You know, and the thing that...
Can we put
energy into both of these things? Yeah. And I think that it's funny looking back on it now is because I've always had the band mindset of like looking at things very like progression and linearly and being like, we'll do this to do this. I didn't like the local band mentality. I don't like the bands who like... Yeah, you go play at the local bar and your shithead friends mess around and then you drink beers and you go home. Like, I that doesn't interest me. I don't know why. Like, I would rather just play less and travel around a little more. That vibe, everyone knows the, like, weird local band scene. Totally. You know what I mean? Like, where it's like, they talk about work all the time and then they play a gig once in a while.
Right.
And
the
like,
weekend warriors.
And it's like, we were kind of weekend warriors, but we kind of weren't. You know, like I had a very different outlook on it. And I think a lot of us felt the same way.
Yeah.
And the reason we were able to go that kind of hybrid model or whatever you want to call it a business way is because we're on the same page. Yeah. All of us were on the same page.
No, the reason I'm harping on that so much is because it is, it's rare.
It's super rare.
It's very rare it just seems like a very healthy, reasonable approach to the way of doing a band, and therefore it will, make you last longer from that. Like, you give the illusion or illustration that you are, a very active band.
Absolutely.
Because of prolific with what you are with your time and your releases. But then it's like, if you peel away the layers, you're just like, oh yeah, like they've done their thing, but like, you know, they haven't played as many shows as Taron a year. Of course not. Like,
hell no. Right. Far from it. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I think more bands than you think don't tour as much as you think. That was kind of a convoluted sentence, but we were just always like upfront about it.
Right.
That's the difference.
That's
true.
There's
tons of hardcore bands that play that hardly ever play or do a
tour
every
festival
2 years.
Bands. Right.
Yeah. But we were just like, yeah, we're not going to do this full time.
Yeah.
And we had a good, most of this band's career where no one gave a fuck about us at all. And we would just play shows to 20 people on the weekends and had a great time doing it. And I loved every second of it.
Right.
But there was a time, not as much anymore, because I've kind of come to terms with my life a little bit more and growing into myself, where it definitely used to really upset me and I would really battle and turning down some soul-crushing offers and being like, full-time. You know,
right. Like, what was the tour where it was like that was that real gut-wrenching thing that you had to kind of like wring your hands, lose sleep over to like, we have to say no to this tour?
It would probably be doing like a longer tour in Europe. Some of the stuff we got offered to do there, like bus tours with this or that. And then earlier on we got, an offer to do, I think it was like 2 weeks in Canada with Terror, like a while. And I was like, at that point I was like, I cannot believe we're getting offered to do this.
Right.
And turning stuff down like that was just really used to kill me. But I didn't feel in my heart of hearts that like I could have pulled it off. I didn't think I could pay my rent, like straight up. I didn't think I could live.
Yeah.
I see like the bands who maybe live in like a punk house in Richmond and pay like $100. Like that is awesome.
Totally.
We just didn't come from this. Like I didn't come from that geographical area. It sucks. And so I think that it was a conscious decision.
Just go that route.
That
path. It's something that struck me too about like, the approach of the band and like obviously like the way that your lyrics are structured. You know, Incendiary is definitely you say things. Like I know that sounds I know that sounds very basic and stupid, but it's like you are obviously trying to get a point across that isn't just solely relying on like
here's the way I feel about things.
Right. Right.
And it's like, you know, for lack of a better term, like, you know, I kind of label it where it's like intelligent hardcore. It's not just like, you know.
Well, thanks. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, that's probably a product of being a little older when I was writing things. You know what I mean? I wasn't 16 and writing,
that's helpful.
Like, I hate my girlfriend, you know, like.
Totally.
But I've always tried to put a little thought into it. I mean, I actually, one thing about me is I hate writing lyrics. I hate writing lyrics and I hate writing. And I picked the wrong profession when I was going into graduate school for that. I've always disliked it.
Right.
I was always pretty good at it and I never liked it.
What was the, is it like the whole process of writing or are there specific things that
you was the process of writing. I always took an extremely long time to pump out material.
Okay.
Lyrics, research papers, whatever you want to call it. It always took a long time for me. Probably because I wanted to make sure everything was, you know,
You're type A.
Type A, right. So I don't really enjoy it. I have things to say and at the end I'm glad that they're on paper and I feel strongly about everything I'm talking about. But the actual like writing process.
Right. Yeah, you're like, I wish someone could write the lyric. I mean, obviously you don't wish someone could write the lyrics for you, but like I wish that process was easier. Like,
let me tell you what I'm feeling and some themes that I want to touch on. And yeah, transcribe it for me. Yeah. That's what I need, a court stenographer.
Right. You're like, I'm going to pour all these words out. You'll get them down on paper.
Yeah, it makes
hopefully
sense.
I'll be able to edit. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Hopefully I'll be able to edit this down. Something that I've noticed you mentioned in previous interviews was just like the idea of like, you know, suburban hardcore, as far as like, I was actually just having a discussion with my wife about this, where it was like, you know, so many of us come from, you know, whatever, middle-class families from suburbs, like what do we have to be angry about?
Yep.
And just that general notion of whatever, not even so much discontent, but just like the attraction of aggressive music. And like, I can't inherently put my finger on it besides the fact, like, I guess I've just, I wouldn't even say rationalize it, but I've just explained it where it's just like, I just knew that there was something compelling about this aggression and that showed me that everything wasn't right in the world. Like, how do you typify like your experience with that sort of that notion of like, you know, suburban life and where the discontent, I guess, kind of came from?
I think that the initial attraction to hardcore was more about the energy. I mean, it is the best live form of music in the world. I'll defend that to the death. It is. You know what I mean? Put it up with any live show.
Totally.
I mean,
if you put like a hardcore show on mute and like for a person that doesn't like screaming.
Right.
And then you'd watch that, you'd be like, oh, that looks great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like it. So it was always that spark, that little like first energy. That's what always attracted me to it. I think as far as anger is concerned, and I've always been kind of an aggressive person.
Yeah.
Some of the things that, you know, you're referring to and sort of about what are you writing about and stuff is, you know, I always touch upon the difference of how hardcore changed in New York, right? Moving from New York hardcore, true New York hardcore, Vinnie Stigma growing up the Lower East Side to, you know, New York became one of the most expensive cities in the world. Again, not to beat a dead horse, but the socioeconomic implications of that is that everyone moved out to the burbs.
Yep.
So you have this crazy thing where you can only be a multimillionaire to live in, say, Manhattan or extremely poor. And so where are parents raising families and stuff? They're in the burbs. That's why I always consider Long Island hardcore is New York hardcore. You know, it things changed. So getting back to like anger and stuff, I can't relate to violence in my life and I can't relate to a struggle growing up. I'll never front and say I had some tough life. You know what I mean? Like I'm sure many of us would say the same,
right.
But that doesn't mean that I didn't take some of the worldview that hardcore provided and kind of put that into some of what I thought and what I wrote about and the way that I saw the world and some of the things that I saw were that I didn't like about it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was coming from a different place. I mean, it evolves.
Sure.
It really does evolve.
Right. Like a recognition of like, but just because I didn't have that, you know, street style experience or whatever, doesn't mean that I can't point to other things that I recognize as being wrong. And that does make me angry.
You know? Exactly. I mean, I think the music has evolved. Now, if I was writing about like, you know, there's going to be a beat down, get your boys, like stuff like that, which actually sounds kind of sick. But like, if if I was going to write about like that, then you'd be like, you know, what the hell is this kid talking about? He's some white kid from Long Island.
Right.
And I am. So I was always conscious of like, no, I want to write about the things that I see that are actually true in my life and try to not front, you know what I mean? I try to always just kind of keep it real.
Represent your view. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there are plenty of things to be angry about in this world. more so than ever. So
finding
you know, that was not difficult.
Right. It's I mean, open up a newspaper. Well, yeah, you know, and people don't know newspapers, so that's a bad reference, but
yeah, online, opening up CNN.com.
Right.
But I think that it's funny, just again, talking about New York, is then moving to New York, becoming a New York City resident and living here, not from the perspective of gang violence and living on the streets, but the perspective of New York City in 2000s, this place is crazy. Yeah. And I believe that New York City, when you live here, it drives you crazy. Some people, it drives very, very slowly. And other people are like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Sure.
It's a crazy place to live. It's super intense and it's just crazy. And I really, a lot of my lyrics and a lot of the things that drove me was some of the frustrations and just the day-to-day life of New York City. Mm. And it's a crazy place.
No, totally. There are very few places where it's like you're the only sanctuary you have is like literally within the four walls of whatever your house
Small house. Yeah,
totally. And then it's like, because the moment you hit the street, when you walk outside your door, that's, you're assaulted.
Yeah, it's just,
yeah,
it's a crazy place. So I think that had a profound effect on me living here, working here, and being like, there's some weird stuff about this area, you know, like things I don't like.
Yeah, I'm going to I'm going to dig into these a little bit further.
Yeah.
Since you've lived kind of, you know, this very, I wouldn't even call it dual lifestyle, but it's like where you,
I get that a lot.
Yeah. Where people like, you know, look at wherever you work in the advertising, the world, and where you would not typically be like, oh yeah, like hardcore kid advertising world, even though that exists, it's very regular. Like that happens all the time. But, your average, you know, mainstream person that just trips into an advertising agency and is just like, oh, you scream in a band?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So what sort of, like, I guess, applications that have you found that have been able to, like, help influence your life that you've obviously learned from, you know, whatever, the DIY community, like, all that sort of stuff to be able to, like, help inform, I guess, the real world people that you deal with?
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, I think that The values and ethics of hardcore and just kind of looking at the world a little bit different and questioning things and saying, well, why is that? You know, oh, well, this is the way it is. Well, why is it the way it is? You know, even just that critical thinking, I've always had that. And I like that you can look at the world a different way and then bring that into your job or your professional life or whatever and still always keep that with you. Right. So it's something that always stays with all of us, I think. And I think as far as, you know, being involved in a scene that's so social, I mean, from a practical standpoint, right? I've just been always talking to people. I'm blessed to have so many friends all over the country, all over the world that I've met from this music. And I think that translates into going my job and being super comfortable with people. I mean, that's all I do is talk to people all day long. And it comes so easy to me. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't wrestle with a certain dichotomy between like the two things that I do. But I've never been a guy that had like a lot of phases. I've always been into the kind of the things that I'm into.
Right.
Like I didn't have like the crazy punk thing where I had my
Liberty spikes.
Yeah. And I had like my nose pierced. Like I didn't have that. I've always been kind of like a confident, not cocky, but confident. And like, this is what I like. You know, I liked hardcore and I liked, you know, the New York Giants and I liked BMX and stuff when I was 14, and now I'm 31 and I like the same things.
Right.
So it really keeps me grounded. Mm-hmm. So it's allowed me to kind of have like a good like bullshit radar for dealing with things in a professional setting or moving forward in my career. Cause I have always felt such a sense of being grounded and kind of having the hardcore, you know, ethics or worldview or social circle that I have. I think it's empowering.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it takes you're much more empowered to go out into the world. I feel like when you have this safety net or safe place or thing where it's like, well, at least these people get me.
No,
you know what I mean? Like at least I can come here and be like, these are my people. This is like where I feel comfortable.
Right.
And this is also my outlet for dealing with maybe some of the frustrations of modern life.
Right. Right?
I mean, it's certainly become a wonderful outlet.
Right.
Even if for nothing else, getting on stage and yelling is certainly an outlet.
Right. It's very cathartic.
It's certainly cathartic. Yeah.
The thing that you hit on there that I find interesting is it definitely,
it does introduce, even though it's like, you know, the notion of like getting into like a fringe style of music is like punk and hardcore or whatever. You know, it's like, whatever, we are the misfits and like, we're all the weird people that get attracted to that. But it does weirdly breed this confidence where it's like,
I totally think so. Yeah. I mean, it's, I just kind of am confident in what I do. And even when it's like the band and stuff, and it's like, oh, like you mentioned, like people be like, wow, you play in a band? Like what's, I, not that I ever talk about it ever.
Yeah. But, hey guys, let me play this for you.
Yeah. But like, I'm like, yeah, this is what I do. Like you'd think it was weird. Like I'm so like over caring about it that, you know what I mean? And that it's become a true part of my life that I'm not like embarrassed of or anything. It's just one of the things that I do.
Right.
And it's funny. It even goes back to like the touring thing, because I'll hear like some comments and chatter like, oh, they're not like a real band. Like they don't tour full time. And I want to be like, it's so funny to say that, because the way that I look about things is like, that is a real hardcore band. The real hardcore bands are the ones who are going to their shitty jobs and then coming home pissed off and playing hardcore because they have to. You know what I mean? Like the Tommy Carrolls of the world, like laying bricks or whatever bullshit, and then, you know, going to scream his face off and straight. Like, to me, that's exactly what hardcore is for. You know what I mean? I always thought that was a great irony of certain people looking down on us and being like, well, you don't really like live hardcore. I was like, nah, I kind of do.
Right.
You know what I mean? For us,
it takes a lot of effort to do what we do.
It certainly takes a tremendous amount of effort.
I
always thought that was really funny, because to me, I was like, the true hardcore bands, it's like, these are these crazy dudes that like have to play in a band or they're going to be in trouble with the law or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If they didn't have this, then like,
it's just supposed
Lord
to be,
knows
it's
where
supposed
they...
to be an outlet, and it's always been that way.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. That was funny.
No, it totally is. Cause it definitely, it's like you always run into that, you know, whatever, art influencing commerce and commerce influencing art, where it's like, you do run into that. Like, you know, I always love where it's like a band like Mastodon. It's like, even like, I think it was like right up until the point they actually signed their major label deal when they were still on Relapse. Mm-hmm. It's like they were going home and like working at bagel shops, you know, it's like they were just doing the punk hardcore kid.
Well, even with, thing. I mean, the changing of the, I mean, you know this better than anyone, the change with your history working in Century Media and stuff, the changing of the music industry. It's like big bands that by all intents and purposes we would consider really popular bands are going home and working because they have to.
Totally.
I mean, like, I think, like, I don't know, I could be mistaken, but I thought an interview with Chris Adler from Lamb of God talking about like he was like working when he was at home. I was like, oh my God. Like they are the rock star, right? Lamb of God. And he was saying something along those lines about like struggling to make ends meet. And it's like, man, it's a different era.
Totally.
It is a different era.
And the notion too, where it's just like the being, if you are pulling from real world experiences, like what you're talking about, like the struggles that you go through on, you know, existing in New York City daily life, if you're not experiencing those because you are removed from it, because you're on tour 10 months out of the year, it's like, where's the inspiration being derived from? You know?
Yeah. I've never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I don't know what I would be mad at. Like everything comes very natural for me. And it's just the way that I that I'm sure, you know, but it would change things. It would be really interesting to see how that would, you know, where that would have netted out for me.
Because touring is like a bubble. You're not existing in a real world. So it's like, that's why it's like some people where it's like, you see, especially like, you know, in like really successful bands, like when they, you know, when they do get home, it's like they do like, you know, they make furniture. It's like they attach themselves to the real world, because otherwise they're just adrift in this weird world.
It's not real life.
No.
I mean, I don't feel like I could hack it.
Yeah.
Of the little touring that we've done, and we've done some, I couldn't do the 35 shows. I couldn't do it. I would be 300 pounds. I would be an alcoholic, and I don't think personally I have the mindset.
Right.
I think I need to do things constantly. And the number one thing that people don't get about touring is how unbelievably boring it is.
Totally. Hurry up and wait, man.
That's right. Hurry up and wait.
Yeah, here we go. Load in at 4.
Load in at 4. Play at 10:30.
Yeah. What? Wait, what do we do for?
I guess we'll walk around Scranton, Pennsylvania on a Tuesday. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that was a big shocker. It is pretty damn boring. So, but again, that's just me. This is the way that I needed to do things.
Right.
You know, for my sanity.
Yeah. No. I just think that, and that's why I was so excited to have you on the show, just because I think that the perspective that you offer is very, it's very unique and it's interesting, because it's like, I just think that more people need to have a more, like you said, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing approach.
Yeah. I don't subscribe to that. I will say this, that a lot of bands have said to me like, man, I wish we kind of like did the things, do what you guys do. Like, I was like, well, you can.
Yeah. Just scale back on time.
And I do understand that when you're doing it full time, and it is brutal.
It becomes,
respect for all of these bands touring full time. I wish they all become the biggest, especially my friends' bands. I want them to become the biggest band in the world. But when you stop, I think it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference.
It's definitely a screeching halt where it's just like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
The transition. Yeah. It's always rough, but
yeah.
Well, dude, I really appreciate you doing this.
Was fun.
Yeah, I mean, your dog fell asleep, so
really, she contributed pretty much nothing. I'm sorry, there. It's kind of a bust.
No, it's okay. Really. It's a wash, but we'll have to interview her at a separate time.
Yeah, she couldn't really have hit her boredom any better.
There you go. And if you hate my transitions from the interview back to this little outro, please email me. Better ways of saying that, because I don't know. I say there we go. Hope you enjoyed that. I don't know. I feel locked in like a 7-word cycle. So email me, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I always love to hear from you, the listener, who are having a good experience with the show. So the producer, as always, to call him the internet funny guy, because basically most of the stuff he puts out on his Twitter or Facebook they usually give me a lol and a real life lol, not just a smirk that you throw up when you are, interacting with the internet. So Tom Richfield. Of course, I'll get to his name eventually. I'm just going to put a bunch of adjectives in front of his name. So I also urge you to sign up to the email list that is a part of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. Go to the website, 100wordspodcast.com. On the right side, I've been doing it once a week. Every Saturday morning, you'll get some cool previews of what's happening with the show, and then also some cool recommendations of stuff you should either watch, read, blah, blah, blah. Because I find that kind of inspires conversation. I've had a lot of people recommend stuff to me too that have ended up being in one of those mailings in the future. So anyways, I'm hoping the fall calms down to where I'm going to be able to launch some of these new things that I've been kind of gestating for a long time, but I've got some ideas and I want to bring more audio into the world that is dedicated to music, because I love music. So anyways, until next week, please be safe, everybody.
High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.